タラッタッタッタッタララタラッタッタッタッタララタラッタッタッタッタララタタララタラタラタラタタ。
Hello and welcome. I'm Helen.
And I'm Caroline.
And we love to sew. This is a podcast for makers where we talk about sewing a handmade wardrobe and bring you interviews with inspiring creatives and small business owners in our community.
Today we are talking with Jessica Nicole, an incredible maker with a fearless approach to her creative process. We talk about making shoes, red carpet DIY, and handmade sunscreen. There's nothing Jessica won't try.
She's try curious.
That's true. We are at the Blackbird studio today, and we're lucky enough to have the lucky or
She's so lucky.
I am lucky.
We're lucky enough to have the lovely Jessica right here in front of us. Hello.
Hey, y'all.
We're so happy to have you here. And I thought we would start off for somebody who maybe doesn't know much about you. Can you tell everybody your name, where you're from, and a little bit about yourself?
Oh, yeah. I just like to say I'm also very happy to be here on this podcast. This is my podcast voice.
I like it.
My name is Jessica Nicole. I am an actor. I live in Los Angeles, but I am shooting a television show in Vancouver, which is why I'm able to be at this very beautiful, for you listeners out there, studio. It's really, really pretty. And I am originally from Alabama. But you will not hear a Southern accent from me unless you give me some wine.
We got champagne.
Damn.
We'll take a halfway break, get some champagne, come back. So you used to live in Vancouver, right?
I did. I lived here for 4 years. I was shooting a sci-fi show called Fringe. Mm-hmm. And that was about 4 years ago. So I've had a lot of time away from Vancouver. And I'm glad I had all that time away because I did not... When I left, I was really excited to leave. I think it was a combination of the job that I was doing. I wasn't super happy with it. And I don't do that well in rainy weather.
Yeah,
cloudy,
it's
rainy
so
weather.
Rainy.
And it's a pretty dreary city. And what's remarkable about it that I found is that the people who live here don't act like it's dreary or rainy at all. They're like, beautiful day, eh? And I'm like, it's pouring. The rain is coming from the sidewalk into my face. And everybody's like, I love Patagonia. It was a little bit tough for me here. But now that I've had some time away, I can come back and like absolutely appreciate. Even when it's raining, it's a beautiful city, mm-hmm. which I would never have, you know, thought until I lived here. So it's very pretty. And another thing I think that was tough for me about the city is I wasn't actually like a big sewer at the time. I knew how to sew, but I didn't really have a community outside of the people that I worked with. And so that just made it really tough. So I headed out to Los Angeles to a desert. I went to the most polar opposite place of Vancouver that I could find.
Where it's always sunny.
It is always sunny. And of course, that is not always awesome either.
Yeah.
So this has been a really, really nice trip. I've been up a few times this year and the weather has been really nice. It hasn't. I mean, there were a couple of rainy days when I first got here.
I saw your rainy Instagrams when you first arrived.
Woo! I have to confess, I saw an Instagram story that you did where you were explaining everything that you brought with you, like to prepare for Vancouver. And okay, can you tell our listeners a little bit about that? Because it was awesome. You brought so many things and you were so prepared and I was very impressed.
So I knew I was going to be here for at least 1 week, probably longer. And the suitcase that I brought did not reflect that at all. It looked like I had a camping tent. It was like a mini camper of a suitcase. So I brought a sewing machine. Because I knew I was going to be here with many days of not working. And I was prepared for rainy weather the whole time. Thankfully, the weather did not do that. We've had more sunny days here than rainy days since I got here. But just in case, I wanted to make sure that I was completely prepared. So I brought my sewing machine. I brought fabric. I brought pre-cut patterns. I brought a small bag of necessity sewing items that is curated and double-checked for accuracy.
Oh my gosh.
Although I was planning to go to dress sew in case I ended up needing anything, which I didn't. But so I brought that. And then for my clothes, I brought a really durable pair of rain boots that are not wellies, so they're not like the really tall, heavy, sweaty kind, because I don't like those rain boots.
I don't like them either.
They're cute, but they're not good for actually walking.
Well, who wants sweaty ankles?
Oh my gosh, the sweaty ankles. It's like the rain is in your boot.
Yeah,
you're
like keeping out the rain, but then you're creating your own rain. A swamp
inside of your toe area.
Yeah.
It's disgusting. So I brought these great little rain boots, and then I brought my Kelly Anorak, which is wool, so I knew that it would be warm enough, because it's not super cold here right now. Mm-hmm. I brought one knitted cowl. I brought one knitted sweater. I brought four pairs of jeans and like five button-down Archer shirts. It was, a very curated wardrobe for which I could mix and match. I didn't realize I would be here for 2 weeks and need to go to a laundromat, which I did.
So you bring your sewing machine with you, which is brilliant.
Thank you.
Is it like a travel sewing machine?
It is. It's not tiny. Renee, which is one of my sewing friends, actually picked it out for me when I was shopping for a sewing machine. I didn't want to. They have a lot of really cute sewing machines that are like turquoise with pink buttons. Mm-hmm. And they're so cute. But I don't know how well they work. I'm a little like, I'm like, can I make a pair of jeans on them? Mm-hmm. So I got a Janome Gym. I think it's 12 pounds, which is wow. Pretty light.
Yeah.
And it fits perfectly into like a roll-on carry-on, especially if you surround it by your fabric. And that's the cushion part.
That's perfect.
It's perfect. It's really, really great. And it does zigzags. And I have made jeans on it. So it's a durable machine. It's really great. I brought it with me to Savannah actually last year when I was there for like a few months. And it was a great sewing machine to have there. And it's really quiet. I like to buy used sewing machines. Like I appreciate, you know, vintage ones that have been used, but I wanted to get something that I knew wasn't going to fall apart or need a lot of service or something. So Renee found me the Janome Gym.
Question. Do you actually bring your sewing machine as like precious carry-on, or do you check it?
Okay. When I went to Savannah, I brought it as precious carry-on. When I came to Vancouver, I was like, oh, heck no. I am putting it in this gigantic minivan of a suitcase. So again, I packed really smartly where I made sure there was like fabric or clothes on the bottom and on the sides of it. Yeah. And I mean, they looked at me like I was a trash human when they saw how heavy it was. because, you know, 13 pounds on top of the rain boots and everything else is a lot. But totally undamaged. I always make sure to turn my wheel so that the needle is down inside of it.
Smart.
And other than that, it was totally fine, not damaged or anything. So I don't treat it like it's a super precious thing. I will say that there was they had gone through my suitcase, I think, because it was so heavy at the airport. So I had the little card in it where they were like, we've ransacked your belongings. What are you doing with these ratty underwear? But the sewing machine was fine.
Bombs are notoriously heavy. I've heard that.
It's true.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay, I want to come back to fringe for a second because you mentioned it.
Don't out me. Are you going to out me?
Yeah. I plan all day. I'm going to out her on the show. Caroline sent me a message today being like, oh my God, Jessica was on Fringe. I was like, yeah. Caroline's like, I watched that entire show and I didn't know that was her.
That was me. Oh my gosh.
Like four seasons.
We're at five seasons. Makes the connection that you're Astrid. It's Astrid,
it's
right?
It's Astrid.
Oh, you're Astrid. I loved your character on the show.
Oh my
god. I'm super embarrassed. But no,
please
I'm
don't be what
know
a treat.
That you were on that show.
It's the cutest thing.
That was the
and
show.
And then I got really nervous.
That she was all
only
nervous
today.
And then you met me and you were like, oh, I should have lowered these expectations a long time ago. Oh my
gosh. Not at all.
Sorry. Well, that makes me so happy that you watched it. It makes me feel like somebody watched that show.
No, it was a good show.
I want to go back and watch it now.
That you've outed me.
Yeah, sorry, not sorry. No, I don't want to move on. I want to talk about how Jessica is a super famous actress.
Oh my God.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so I like being an actress means that you have like weird time off, right? Like you kind of have some like stretches of time where you're not working and then stretches of time where you're really, really busy with work, right?
That is very true.
So how does that play into sewing? Does that mean that you get to have some like really intense sewing time?
Oh
when you're
boy,
not
does it? Whoa. Okay, so when Fringe ended, and then we decided to move to Los Angeles instead of go back to New York, which is where we had come from. And so it was a really tough transition for me. It was like the first time I was in the job market again after 5 years. And also, again, like that show was kind of a weird relationship. It was just like, I think mentally and emotionally, I was in a weird place coming off of that. And so we moved to LA. We wanted to buy a place. We finally found a place. One of the reasons that it was my top place was because it had a place that I could put a craft room. At the time, it was going to be a craft room. I was like just dipping my toe into the sewing waters after so many years.
Yeah, but you knew it was coming.
I knew it was coming. I was so prepared for it. And so we moved down to LA in like January, and that's pilot season. And so it was just a lot of like going out and putting yourself out there for these casting directors to judge you and say, do we like your look? Do we want you? And nobody wanted me. And I, you know, whatever. It was tough. I was depressed, long story short. And so I had a lot of time to sew because I didn't have a job. And then once pilot season is over, you kind of have months until stuff starts to pick back up again. So it became an obsession for me at that point. Once I made a couple of things that fit really well and that didn't look homemade, and I'm making air quotes right now, like nothing is wrong with looking homemade, but I didn't want people to go, did you make that?
Yeah, like with that tone, right?
With that
tone.
Did you make that? Like, did you quilt that dress yourself? I didn't want that to happen. So I had a lot of time to do that. And it took a while for me to kind of like start working again. And again, I think this was probably a little bit of self-sabotage because I wasn't ready to get into another relationship with the job again. So I took a lot of time to kind of, you know, just do stuff that I was excited about doing. And that's when I learned how to make furniture and I learned how to reupholster and stuff. Like I had a lot of time to do all these creative things that I didn't really have the opportunity to do while I was in Vancouver. And sewing was one of them. And so I think I have a bit of a better balance. You know, like I have work stuff and then when I have days off, I'll hole up in the sewing room by myself for hours at a time. But I mean, it really was kind of like putting my 10,000 hours in because I just had such a huge chunk of time where I didn't have anything else to do. So I could just work on adjusting the fit over and over and over again and trying out these fabrics over and over and over. And it really showed, I think after like a couple of years, I was like, I can make a lot of things and know that they're going to look good on my body. And that's all I ever really wanted to do. That's a lie. I wanted to do a lot of things, but that's one on the list.
I mean, yeah, you can totally see your journey on your blog, especially from when you started sewing to now. And the things that you're making now are incredible. And you're wearing them to like red carpet events and stuff. Like, do people ever ask you like, who are you wearing? And you get to be like, me.
They do. And they usually don't believe me. And they're like, she didn't understand the question. Next. And I'm like, okay. Okay, it's fine. This isn't for you. This is for me. This is for me and my head and my heart. One of the other reasons that I got really into making clothes was because, so when I first started Fringe, it was my first, you know, really big project that I'd done. And I started out in musical theater. So I thought I was just going to be like in the chorus stuff for the rest of my life. And I was okay with that. And so, you know, the television and film is so different than theater work. And there's a lot of like appearances that you have to do and red carpet events, which sounds really nice and fun on paper, and it can be, but, you know, eventually, like anything, it just becomes a job, and you just have to show up and hope that, you know, you don't have bags under your eyes and that you shaved all the right places that people expect for you to shave. And
you don't end up on some tabloid somewhere.
My gosh, who wore it better? Not Jessica. She doesn't wear anything better. And so.
But you're never going to be wearing the same dress as someone else.
That is a very true thing. And so back when I first got started, I was kind of amazed, like, how many times I had to go out and buy things. And I was somebody who did a lot of retail therapy. Not when I was poor, obviously. I would do a lot of retail window shopping. But, you know, if I had money, I loved to go shopping for clothes. That was something that I grew up using as a feel-good thing. Like, you know, you had a bad day, go shop for something. Or you're celebrating something, go shop for something. Shopping is like, you know, the catch-all for pretty much every emotion that you could experience. And it was taking the fun out of it when I'm like, oh, I have another of this event to go to. I don't even want to go to it, and I don't know what to wear. And so, like, I scramble out to the store to try and find something that looks good. It's just, it's not fun. It took away the fun of, you know, and if you're like, you know, Rihanna, they're just sending you buckets and buckets of clothes for you to wear, so you don't really have to shop like that. But for just a regular old working actor, you're just trying to look as good as you can. I didn't want to pay a stylist. I don't like that. Like, yeah. I like the way that I dress. I just didn't have, you know, all the time to find it. And the money, too. Like, that's a lot of outfits to have. So in my head, I thought to myself, and this was like years later, but I thought, man, that would be so cool if I just had a bunch of things in my closet that I knew I liked that fit me and that I would rotate out. Like, I don't mind wearing the same thing at, you know, a couple of different events, especially if I'm really happy with them. And if other people care about it, then that's their deal. But I was just so tired of having to go to the store and participate in that cycle of buy, just to never wear it again, or at least, you know, at an event or something. Mm-hmm. It can be a really gross consuming industry in so many ways, but even down to what you wear and what you get photographed in. And I remember seeing, like, a, you know, those gossip rags with, like, I don't know, Kate Hudson in it or something, and they'd be like, she wore the same jeans in 1 week. And I'm like, are you on a drug? Like, I hope she does. That's not something that we should applaud. We should expect for people to wear the same jeans or the same sweater or the same whatever. And you know, I'm not like changing the culture or anything, but I just didn't want to participate in it anymore. So that was one way that I could think of to do that.
Mm-hmm. And a way you could get excited again about the events, right? Because you get to make something for it.
Oh, which, my gosh, that is absolutely true. And I've talked a little bit with Marcy Unabaluna, who's like another super well-known sewing blogger who is a really talented actor. And we talked briefly about this, but like, even going to auditions, I always wear something that I've made. And even if my audition is horrible, I can walk out of that room going, I made this dress though. I didn't get that role, but I made this dress. And it really would change the way that I walked into a room and carried myself, because you feel like you do have something to prove and you're trying to, you know, make these strangers that you don't really know happy. Mm-hmm. But walking into a room in something that I made, you know, whether they know it or not, would immediately, I feel like, level out the playing field a little bit.
Yeah, you're already proud of yourself,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. And yeah, that makes, it makes such a huge difference in like these tiny little ways. And again, like in a really personal way, not that they know. Although more and more I've had a casting director say, loving that dress. And I'm like, well, guess what, girl? I made it. And then have like a 5-minute conversation with the director and her about sewing, which, yeah, kind of like takes the tension away a little, yeah, bit.
It makes you memorable.
Yeah. Makes me memorable. Makes me feel good about having something else to talk about. Like, you, mm-hmm, know, the acting industry is kind of sometimes. I just made like a poot noise
and a thumbs down.
Yes, totally.
So, yeah, tell us a little bit about that, because it is such a hard industry. There's tons of competition. You're facing rejection all the time. Like, how do you handle that?
I don't know. I don't think this is true for me anymore, but when I started out, I really did have not low expectations, but I just wanted to be working. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to be a working actor. That was my goal. And I thought it was possible that I could achieve that. And so I grew up in Alabama and I went to school in North Carolina and I moved to New York after I worked at Chili's and Delia's and The Express and Bath and Body Works. For 8 months, I had 4 part-time jobs in Birmingham.
My God.
All at the same time to save up money to move to New York. And when I had $1,500, I was like, I'm gone. And now I'm like, $1,500?
Right?
That's like not even 1 month's rent. But I'm glad I didn't know that because otherwise, who knows how long it would have taken me to actually get up there. Mm-hmm. And so I went up there thinking, you know, I'll do musical theater. I'll audition for musicals, which is what I studied in school. And it'll be great if that happens. And if it doesn't, I was an illustrator. So I thought like maybe I can get some work in fashion illustration or some kind of illustration work while I'm up there. And I was like, we'll see whichever one sticks. And so I ended up doing like more commercials and television and film and stuff, which was exciting because it pays a lot more, but it is not as creatively fulfilling as theater, as you can imagine. Mm-hmm. But I used to think that it wasn't challenging, that like TV and film work was so easy and they just like baby you and coddle you, and theater is like the real actor's work. And that is like, you know, so not a true thing for me anymore. It's almost like they're two completely different art forms in a lot of ways. And so now I see my role in the television and film industry in a totally different way. Cause I think that being like a Black and a queer woman in that line of work really carries a lot of weight with it. And while I don't want to be responsible for like a whole community of people, I also know what an impact it has to see somebody like me in television and film, especially even on Fringe. Like it's a girl who's in the STEM sciences. And so that's a really cool thing for like young Black women or young Black girls to see that. And so each job that I take, you know, I've had some jobs that I was like, this isn't my favorite thing to do, or this isn't very creatively fulfilling. But I try to remind myself of how important it would have been when I was a younger person to see somebody like me on television. And I needed that. So I think I still need it. Like, even though I'm an adult and I'm doing it, I still feel how I missed out on seeing that and not having the kind of representation that I need. And with that has come more interesting projects, which is a really interesting connection. I don't know. I'm not saying that it's necessarily, you know, intentional. It could be just a coincidence. But the work that I've gotten over the past few years has been stuff that I've been really proud of. And I didn't take it just like, you know, to get a paycheck. I was excited to be a part of it. Like Underground, which is a really, really tough show to watch. I will warn you all. It's about the Underground Railroad. And it's a really beautifully written depiction of what it was like for people who were enslaved to get out of slavery. And it talks about all the different aspects of that, you know, in terms of the white people that were helping them and the Black people that were empowering themselves and all the violence that comes with that. That was a really, really awesome show to do. And even The Good Doctor right now, which is a main character who is autistic, he's on the spectrum and he's super, super smart, but has a lot of trouble. Just has a lot of trouble navigating social relationships and having like, quote unquote, a good bedside manner as a doctor. And so my sister is autistic and you watched Fringe. Like I got to play a version of a character who was on the spectrum. So that kind of stuff feels like, you know, you're participating in something that will have a positive impact on certain people's lives.
Yeah, that's very inspiring.
The whole thing was very inspiring. I don't know what else to say.
And your blog is also inspiring because I think you want to do the same thing for the sewing community as well and be that person that people can look up to and see themselves in the community, hopefully, if they want to take up sewing and they're queer or they're African American and they want to.
Thank you for saying that. I worry sometimes. Not worry. But I don't know. My blog isn't for everybody, and that's okay. There's a lot of sewing blogs out there, so you can probably find the perfect, you know, account that's for you. But when I think of, like, you know, intersectionality in my feminism and the way that I walk in the world, and nothing is isolated. Like, my sewing is influenced by how I interact with people and the fact that I'm a queer woman and that I sew for her and that she has a gender representation that is like a masculine of center. And so she doesn't go to stores that are, you know, traditionally for women's bodies and necessarily sees the things that she wants to wear. And so that affects, like, you know, how I think about my privilege as a cis woman who's in the world and looking for patterns and stuff like that. Like, it all kind of connects together in these really weird ways. I haven't figured it out, but I do like to talk about it and let people know that, you know, even if it's not the identity that they're familiar with or anything, that these people are in the world kind of going on the same journeys in a lot of weird ways. And so, like, recently Claire and I had done this video together because I had made her some bros, and a bro is her term for essentially a binder, which is a garment that some people will wear to kind of push in the boobs and flatten them out so that they aren't in the way, so that they aren't distracting to themselves or to other people. And it's kind of like a glorified sports bra, but with a little bit more like tightness and stability in it. And so we worked on making her those, and we decided to do a video about it to talk about her gender expression, because people were like, what is a bro? I don't get it. And I got so many really nice comments from people saying, oh, I think that that's a garment that I would like to wear. I never knew that it was okay to not want to have your chest, like, you know, on display necessarily, if that's not how they want to express themselves. And then this other person wrote me and said that she had somebody that was trans at her church and was having a little bit of difficulty trying to find garments to wear. And so she wanted to make them some bros, and she was asking about the pattern and stuff. And so that part felt really, really exciting, because I don't think that it's a topic that's talked about a lot. There are a lot of like queer sewers out there for sure that are having conversations. And so I just wanted to participate in that in a new way, I guess.
The video is also hilarious. It's so funny. You guys have to go and watch it. It's amazing.
You're so sweet for watching that. Thank you, Ellen.
I really like the part when Claire was like, actually, there's some things that I would change for next time. And we're like, wait, what? Like, what kind of things?
Oh, I'm sorry. You have notes for me? Notes for me on this thing that
you guys worked it out on the video. It was great.
That's awesome.
No, I think that's really powerful, though. We recently interviewed Jillian from Crafting a Rainbow.
Yeah.
And she runs The Socialist, or helps run The Socialist. And she was talking about a new series that they have called Who We Are. And this kind of like is reminding me of that, because it's all about sewers kind of talking about like who they are and basically like their background and religion and all different things. And I think that like it's really important to talk about those things, because there are people out there from all different backgrounds that identify in all different ways, and they don't necessarily always see themselves in the sewing community. Mm-hmm. So talking about it is like really important, I think, and you're definitely doing that. So that's awesome.
Thank you so much. I yeah. feel so honored to participate in it at all. And I'm going to stop talking. And I was going to say something and it like totally disappeared. And I couldn't think of a gracious way to touch my mouth.
It's all good.
Totally fine.
Okay, let's talk about your blog for a second. Okay. It's aptly named the Try Curious Blog. So when did you start this blog and why?
Gosh, I think it was like 3 years ago. And I started it because it took me a really long time to get introduced to the online sewing community. Like a really long time. I don't know what I was looking at.
When you were sewing, but you weren't.
I was sewing. Like, I had discovered Colette Patterns. And that was the first, like, indie kind of sewing company that I knew that existed. I thought that she was the only one for, like, a year and a half. And I was like, wow, she's really running the market. Other people need to get in on this. I was just, I guess I just had tunnel vision and I wasn't really doing my research. And so I don't know how I came across it, but I came across Miss Seeley's blog, Miss Seeley's Pants, which is Renee, who's my sewing friend. She's my sewing BFF. We just made it official last week.
Renee gets a lot of shout outs on the show. So
I bet she does. Like, I tell you what, I spent hours on her blog that day. So hers was the first one that I really found. And she was sharing like personal things about her life and her mom and her dad. And I looked at her wedding photos and teared up. And I was like, good for you, Renee. Like, I had such an experience and it was completely one-sided. And I remember thinking the fact that she was a Black woman was like just really cool to me because I didn't know of any Black sewers. And I had no idea there was like a community of lots of different people that was super diverse. But at the time, she was really like my main inspiration. I was like, I think this is a fun thing to talk about the process of what you're doing. And because I had started making furniture and gotten into woodworking and started trying out a lot of different hobbies and projects, I thought it would be a really cool thing to just like have a little blog. Cause I already had a website, you know, which is jessicanicole.com. It's an actor. I'm rolling my eyes, guys. For you listeners at home, like actor websites are whatever, you know,
yeah, you gotta have one.
You gotta have one, but I'm like, you can also just go to IMDb and like look up a name, you know, like what are those websites for? I don't know. And I always felt like I needed to have one, but it just never resonated with me. So my website always had like my illustration work on it, writing and stuff like that. So starting a blog on it made so much sense. I was like, oh, this is just an extension of the other creative things that I do. So I'll have my illustration work. And if I ever do like any published pieces, I'll put them up here. And then I'll be like, you can watch me on Sunday night, 8-9 Central on this television show. But really, it's about the making stuff.
Yeah.
And so, and then after that, I found Closet Case Patterns and her What's Doing segment on Sundays really changed my life. Really changed my life. That's how I met, or not even like met in real life, but that's how I was introduced to the community and was like, hey, how long you guys been here? I have no idea.
I love hearing that because I have heard people tell me like that, like people hating on those like roundup posts, like, oh, they're boring. Helen, you do one.
Yeah, I was like, excuse me.
Like, there's way too many of those out there, but it's true that like somebody who's new to the community who maybe discovers a new blog and that blog does a roundup post, like there cannot be too many because it will change somebody's life. And I love that you just said that.
100% agree with you. And I follow your weekly roundup. That they're awesome. I click on every single link. I don't even read the post. I just click on it. I'm like, cute blouse. Neat pants. Good job. Sometimes I do read the whole thing.
Yeah.
But it has really not only opened up my world to all these other bloggers who were doing cool things, but the only reason I started making shoes was because Heather on Closet Case put up one little link about some girl in Australia who
Carolyn.
Read the book.
Was it Carolyn?
It wasn't even Carolyn. It was somebody else. Oh. I found her later. This was like a long time ago.
Okay.
It was this girl and she was like, yeah, I'm going to make some shoes. Okay, you can edit that out too.
Wait, are you an actor?
Sorry, that was flawless.
Oh my gosh, people are gonna hate that. So I clicked on it, and she basically was like, you know, I found this book about making shoes, and I really feel like my world, like the bottom of it dropped out in a good way. And then mountains came up underneath it and I was on top of the world. I was like, you can make shoes? And I'm not talking felted slippers. I really was so floored by it. And I remember telling Clara, I just stared at the screen for a minute and I was like, Clara, did you know you can make shoes? And she was like, sounds cool, honey. And I was like, yep, on it. And so I like bought the book. I went to all the websites that that girl listed. And that was the beginning. And, you know, that was years ago at this point. And shoemaking is way more mainstream than it was even just a few years ago. Like there's a lot of places you can buy the materials and tools from and stuff. But I would never have even known that that was a possibility if Heather hadn't done that little roundup. And so, yeah, I think it's great for beginning sewists. And it's also inspiring for people who have been doing it for so long. I see new patterns all the time on yours because you do the new pattern releases too. Mm-hmm. It's just fantastic. I love it so much. I didn't even know people don't like those.
I know people hate on it sometimes. And I'm like, no, I think that they are good.
They are so good.
Yeah.
They're good. Really, and it's hard to find ones that come out like consistently.
Too. Yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Helen, you've done one like pretty much, you almost never skip weeks.
106, baby.
106. A lot of work.
Bless not you. As long as Heather's, but
Heather, yeah. We're mentioning Heather. We mentioned Heather basically on
every episode. We did it now, so we can move on.
Okay, now that that's done.
No, but I mean, okay, let's talk about shoemaking because yeah, it really is incredible.
We definitely want to talk about shoemaking.
And I've never made shoes, but I do watch your Insta stories where you go through your process sometimes with your so clogs and your sandals.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, it's so cool. So is it hard? It looks really hard.
Okay. This brings in that like fear thing. There are like certain things I think for makers or seamstresses that seem like it's too hard. You know, you're like, I can't make jeans or I can't make a coat or I can't make shoes. Like, I feel like I'm like, I can't make shoes. Can I make shoes?
You could make shoes in a day. If you came to my house, you can make a pair of sandals. In like a morning and an afternoon.
Okay, so next week, yeah, we'll be there.
Yes. I tell people all the time, like, come make shoes. It's so fun because it's one of the few projects that you really can do in a day, you know, as opposed to jeans, which take a lot of time fitting and stuff. But shoes are, particularly sandals, because you don't need to last. Shoes can be tricky with the leather bottom because you got to last the shoe onto the – and a last for anybody out
what's
there.
I thought you said you don't need them to last. And I was like, I'd like them to last.
You don't need it to last. One wear and they're done. Perfect. Okay, you throw those out like fast fashion.
You make them Saturday, you wear them Sunday, Monday, start over.
So a last is basically a replica of the shape of your shoe. Think of it like a dress form, but it's for your foot.
Like the little wooden feet.
Exactly. The little wooden feet. You have one for the right and one for the left. So this is really great for people who like have feet that are different sizes or have an injury or something like that. So you can get a last, you know, that is accommodated for whatever it is that you need. You can also make a last out of plaster Paris, which I've done, which is super fun.
Cool.
All you need is a shoe that you don't want. And that's where I always stumble because I'm like, what shoe do I have that I don't want anymore that you can destroy essentially?
You like pour plaster into
it. You pour plaster into it and you coat it with Vaseline so that you can cut the shoe off around it. But it's like a super easy way to make a last and it's really great. So, but with sandals, you don't need that. All you need is, the bottom of your foot and you basically trace, onto leather. Or if you don't like to use leather, you can use like PVC fabric or something like that, but you trace out the way you want the sole to look. And then you play around with the leather pieces and how you want them to fit. And there are a couple of different ways you can do it. You can put the leather all the way around the sole and put another sole on the bottom, or you can punch holes and cut slits into the top of the sole so that the upper leather like slides in underneath it. But that's it. It's mostly like waiting for glue to dry and stuff. It's super fun. And it's so satisfying because they look amazing. Yeah. You know, your foot isn't like your waist and your hips and your bust and stuff.
Yeah. And shoe style these days is kind of ultra simple anyways, right? Absolutely. So a couple straps and you got designer footwear.
That's absolutely. And you don't need a lot of fat. Like, I mean, if you're using leather or velvet or fabric, it takes such a small amount of it. Like, you know, you could go to like a scrap store and buy $2 worth of material and be so good. It's really, really fun. And the other thing I hate is going to stores where they have like $200 leather flat sandals. And I'm like, how is this $200? Now, that's not saying that people who are making bespoke footwear don't deserve to get money. I'm just saying I can do it for cheaper myself.
Yeah, it's the same thing that happens with clothes, right? When you go into stores now, you're just like, I guess I could make that.
Yeah. It's totally the same thing. But yes, put a sandal making on your list.
Yeah.
So when you hop down to Los Angeles, we'll have a little day of it.
So as far as the sort of step-by-step when you get into shoemaking, like sandals and then are clogs like at the top of the list of the shaping?
Clogs are like the easiest.
Really?
I mean, yeah, it depends on what you want your upper to look like. But if you want like a cute sandal clog or like a peep toe or something like that, that is the quickest shoe that I've made. It's even quicker than Birkenstocks. And you can make Birkenstocks really easily because you just buy the cork footbed. And then you basically, you know, do the leather however you want to look and put a rubber sole on the bottom.
And then
of
you
it.
Have to shape out, because Birkenstocks have like a foot shape to them.
So you buy, it's shaped out. You oh. buy the cork footbed in the size that you need. So whatever Birkenstock you wear, you go to the store in Los Angeles and you buy the 38, and it's the actual Birkenstock footbed cut out and everything. What? And you just put the leather around it.
How much does that cost?
I think they were like $35.
What?
What? What about the, okay, so and the clog, the clog,
yeah,
wood,
yeah,
thing. Where do you get that?
So I found some on Etsy, and it was like this guy in Portugal, maybe, who made wood clog bottoms. His clog bottoms were $18 a pair, but the shipping was like $60. Oh no. So I was like, this is amazing. He's selling these so cheap. Oh, okay. All right. The shipping was more than both pairs of the bottoms that I bought. But then I went back, and I don't think he's in business anymore, or maybe he took a hiatus. I don't know. But then I found this other company on Etsy that also has, they're not hand-shaped wood bottoms, but they're beautifully made and they're really lightweight. So the reason that clogs are so easy is because you just staple, you don't have to glue.
Right.
You don't have to do any of that. You just staple it onto the side. Mm-hmm. And it took me hours to figure out a design, and I think I made him in 2 minutes, and I was like, wow, that was quick.
I was thinking they would be harder just because I imagined you having to like cut out the wooden part and like sand the sort of foot shape that's on there.
I mean, if you're handmade by Carolyn and you're doing it yourself, then you are absolutely right. It takes a lot of time. I would love to do something like that. I am so nervous that I'm going to get like the rise of the foot bed, if that makes any sense, wrong.
Yeah.
Because it's got some specific things to it, and I don't like to walk around in uncomfortable shoes, so I feel like I'd have to do a lot of research for that. But it can be done. She did it. Her clogs are beautiful. All her shoes are really, really beautiful. Mm-hmm. So that is a realistic goal, but I just buy them from a man in Portugal.
Okay, so do you have any, other than Handmade by Carolyn, do you have any other like shoemakers that we should link in the show notes that will be inspiring for people other than you, of course?
I love Rachel C's Snail Shoes.
Okay.
And it's all one word. She's on Instagram and she has a website. I took her class. I've taken a few classes, and hers was by far my favorite. She is so good at what she does. She has beautiful designs. They're so well made. And she goes all around the country teaching shoe classes, but she also has shoe kits now that she sells. So you can buy her sandal shoemaking kit and make a gorgeous pair of sandals from your home. And she gives you every single material that you need.
Oh, that's what we're going to do.
Awesome. Yeah. Please do it.
I love kits.
Yeah. No, right? Kits are so fun. And I've only seen the photos of hers, but I've seen other people that bought them and they showed their sandals. It's great. Literally every single thing that you need is in her kit. She's based out of Portland, I believe. She's like a very tall fairy nymph. Like you see her and there's just something magical. And she's got this long hair and she's got like doe eyes and she just doesn't look like a real person. She's one of the, you know, these people where you're like, of course you make bespoke footwear for a living. Like you look like you would. She's just very beautiful, has a very calm spirit. And she has this really crazy story. I don't know all the details of it, but basically there was a fire that happened in her closet years and years ago. And all of her shoes were burned. And she was devastated, but they like kind of disintegrated into the pieces, the separate pieces that they were. And she was like, well, it looks like I could just make these. And that's how she started making shoes. What? She went to a cobbler, or not a cobbler. I think she went to a lot of different people who work in the shoemaking and shoe repair business and was like, so how do I do this? How do I do this? How do I do this? And she came up with her own like special way of making shoes. And she's wonderful. And her Instagram is really, really pretty and very inspiring too.
Oh, awesome. Definitely have to link her in the show
notes.
Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah. Yeah, she's my favorite. And then, and then another one is Brooklyn Shoe Space. And they are based out of Brooklyn, and they offer shoemaking classes, and they offer sneaker making classes.
Whoa.
Cool. Which looks so cool.
I didn't even sneaker making. All of this shoemaking talk, and I had excluded sneakers in my mind from that.
Because that feels like too, like a machine must make sneakers, right? Like,
and they have like a lot of really cool makers that come in and teach classes, and their Instagram is great, super inspiring. Lots of cool stuff on there. Those are my top.
Oh, well, like thank you for that.
A new awesome. Addiction coming on. Yeah, for sure.
I'm all for it.
Do you have a preference between sewing and shoemaking and all of the other creative things that you do?
Oof. That's a really tough one. My first love is shoemaking. Sewing, I would say.
I was like, wait, what?
Freudian slip, though, maybe? I was going to say sewing because... Because I really know what I'm doing with sewing and shoemaking. There's still so many variables, particularly when you're working with lasts and making a closed-toed shoe. That's the more complicated. And I've never like welted a shoe before, which is like where you basically sew the upper onto the soling leather that's on the bottom. I've never done that. I just glue the shoes together. So I would love to learn how to do that. But there's a lot that can go wrong. Like if your last isn't the right size and you don't really know until the shoe is done because you can't try it on in the process because you have to build it on the last. That's a really annoying. I've made several pairs of shoes. I was so excited for them and I put it on and it did not fit. It was like huge or incredibly tight. And that's a real bummer.
Yeah.
That's a real bummer. So at least with sewing, you kind of have a good idea at early on in the process, like if something isn't going to work or you're going to need to adjust it. So I think that's probably why I like sewing the best.
Except with bras.
Yes. Oh, bras or swimsuits. Like you don't know until the end. But yeah. That final elastic's in, you're like, oh.
Those bras with the underwire. I am not even going to tell you how many I've made that I've had to get rid of that didn't work.
This is good, I think, for new sewists to hear, though, because it's so challenging when you're first starting out and you really want your projects to turn out and they don't a lot of the time when you're new at sewing. And it's nice to hear that if you persevere, don't let it get you down. Don't let it stop you from trying a new project and just, you know, keep going. And eventually you'll be able to make ball gowns and shoes and all sorts of Jessica inspired.
Oh, gosh. Garb.
Okay, so do you have like a favorite make of all time? I know that's like a big question.
I know.
I like asking big questions.
A lot of sewists have this thing where it's like, I just make party dresses, but I have nowhere to wear them just because like I just make party dresses and I have everywhere to wear them.
I have actual places to wear them to. Yeah. Oh gosh, favorite make. That is so hard. I mean, I feel like my proudest make has been jeans. Because I too was like, oh, there's no way in heck I'm ever going to make a pair of jeans. What are you, crazy? And then it happened. And I was like, wow.
Yeah. Are the ginger jeans your go-to?
I love the ginger jeans. I have not tried any other jeans patterns. Oh, that's a lie. I did the Deer and Doe saffron jeans.
Oh, yeah.
And they're super, super cute. But I tend to, just because that Cone Mills denim is so excellent, and that's what I always make the gingers in the morning. I'm wearing Morgan's now. And I've also mashed.
Bending under the table.
We're checking it out.
Checking out the Morgan's.
I didn't know that those were handmade.
We're going to have to inspect them later.
Oh, look at this butt. I'm close. Okay. And then I'll say my most recent make that is my favorite is my floral suit that I made. Because that had been on my list for a long time. And I kept putting it off because I was like, oh my goodness. Really make a suit? What am I doing? And it totally wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. I don't really like to muslin, but I know that I need to with new things. So I'll procrastinate projects that I know will need a muslin for a very long time.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that I saw it through to the end because it's a really fun outfit. I really like wearing it.
It's awesome. Like so many of your makes, it's very colorful and printed and fun and out there. Like, do you struggle at all sometimes just having things to wear day to day? Or like, do you make basics as well?
I sure do.
Well, there's a lot of crazy stuff on her blog.
There's a lot of crazy stuff.
I was going through it this morning like, wow.
You know, and I bet it's because I'm like, nobody wants to see another pair of true bias
Hudson pants
that I have made 17,000 pairs. I could do a weekly roundup just of Hudson pants and like be good for the rest of the year. Shopping does not have the same excitement for me anymore. Mm-hmm. So if I don't have to go to the store and buy something, mostly I'll go to see if I can get inspired by something or see something I like. And I'll be like, I'll try and make that. But I really don't. I get more excited if I can make it myself. So I think that that has made my regular wear a lot more basic, you know, because I'm kind of a little bit more limited, but I'm really okay with that. I have a lot of basic wear because I hardly leave the house. Hardly.
This is reassuring because I also hardly leave the house and wear Hudson pants and t-shirts every day.
All the time.
It's fine, right?
It's totally fine. It's totally fine. I feel like I do have a wardrobe that really reflects my personality. Like I have a lot of comfortable pants. So does my wife. Honestly, that's who most of the Hudson pants are for. She likes to go fabric. She loves going fabric shopping. She does not love sewing, but she will pick out all the fabric in the world and be like, can you make me 3 pairs of Hudson pants in all 3 of these different fabrics? And I'm like, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. That's okay. Great. So you sew for your wife often?
I do.
Good for you. Helen and I are pretty selfish seamstresses. We don't.
I've made Sam a couple pair of Hudson pants. Just make the Hudson pants. It'll like, you know.
Yeah, I've made Shay a pair of Hudson pants too. And he's worn them. I need to make him another pair. They have like holes in the back. Like where his ankles. Like,
see, that's so nice when it's well worn too, and you know that they like actually get good use out of it.
Yeah.
You know, that feels really good.
Well, who isn't gonna get good use out of like a pair of bamboo sweatpants?
Yeah.
It's just like the best feeling ever.
Like honestly.
Yeah.
It's that, man, I love that pattern.
I feel like if we ever do get to like some kind of utopian future where we're all wearing the same outfit, we're all going to be wearing Hudson pants.
Oh my gosh, that is the way it should be.
Right?
Okay.
Hey, did you ever see the movie Her?
No, I haven't seen it.
Darn it.
Why, were you in it?
I wish. It's like a, you know, kind of futuristic movie, but just a very mild spoiler. So the clothing in the film is supposed to be, well, you know, it's futuristic because it takes place in the future, but they actually have just reinvented like old stuff, old outfits from the 70s, and all the men's pants are high-waisted and come to like right below their nipples. And it was so, I was so distracted. I was like, that's what we're wearing in the future? I do not believe you. I do not believe that we wouldn't go for comfort.
Yeah.
I cannot imagine that those high-waisted pants were very comfortable.
No. Yeah.
And I was like, that's a lie. That's not my future. I'm into it. Hudson pants for the future.
Hudson pants for the future.
They're perfect.
It's going to be like the Hillary suits in all colors of the rainbow, but just Hudson pants in all colors of the rainbow.
Perfect.
Dress it up, dress it down.
Yep. Go to a fancy dinner or a coffee shop.
Okay, you are a true maker because you also make beauty products. Is that right?
Yeah. I make like bath and beauty products.
Okay, tell us about that.
Most all of my making comes from me being frugal and refusing to pay money for something that I know I can make for less, particularly sunscreen. I hate spending money on sunscreen.
How do you make sunscreen?
Oh my gosh, so
easy. Are you into like natural beauty? Is that why you started learning how to make beauty products?
I am, and let me tell you why. Because, okay, so my wife Claire, super, super, super pale, very susceptible to like not good moles, and has had I don't even know how many taken off. So she has to have a good sunscreen. So we would always use that Neutrogena with Helioplex because the articles were always like, this is the best on the market.
It smells good too.
And it smells good. And we used that for years. And it's like $15 for a bottle that I could use in 3 afternoons. And so I would hate spending that money, but I was like, it's the best one, whatever. And then this study came out, and I'm not somebody who's like, you know, antioxidants and cancer. Like, you know, I want to be healthy, but I'm not.
Get these toxins out of my body.
I'm not that person, but I read this study and it was like, yeah, that Helioplex is coming out in people's urine. And I was like, what? It's absorbing into the skin. And so they were like, you won't get skin cancer from it because it'll protect you from the sun, but you might get another cancer because your body is absorbing it like in all your organs and stuff. And I was like, why am I paying a lot of money for this? This isn't good. And then, like, you know, you would go to like Whole Foods and they would have the natural sunscreens and they were even more expensive. Mm-hmm. And so I said, there's...
And they don't smell good.
And they don't smell good. You know what I said to myself? There's got to be a way. Guess what? There's a way.
I'm so excited to hear about
it. Oh my gosh. It's super easy. You basically like use a little double boiler system on top of your stove just to melt the ingredients. But mine is based with shea butter and coconut oil and zinc oxide, cosmetic grade, which is important. And that's basically like the tiny white powdery stuff that deflects the sunlight and protects your skin from like the UV rays and all that stuff. And so you melt all the oils and then you add your zinc. And the cool thing is that you can up the zinc a whole lot if you want it to be super, super heavy, or you can lower it down. And then you can also add additional oils that have natural SPF, like avocado oil. Raspberry seed oil has a super high natural SPF, and the other one is carrot seed oil. Both of those have like super high. So I add that in addition to the zinc to give it even more oomph. And so Claire took this to her dermatologist and was like, this is what my wife is making me. Is this okay? And the dermatologist was so into it. And she was like, I don't like it when people use those over-the-counter products. She doesn't think that they're good. She doesn't think that they work as well. And Claire has had, I think the first mole that she got removed, like since I started making it, was maybe last year or something. And this is from somebody who would get a mole taken off at least every time she went to the dermatologist. And we live in Southern California. Yeah. So it works really well. And I make big batches of it. Oh, so after you melt everything, you stick it in the fridge, let it cool. And then if you have like a KitchenAid mixer or a, you know, hand beater, it makes it fluff up. So that it's not, it's like a whipped butter instead of like a slather, thick, greasy thing. Oh, and that's the other thing. It's not greasy. So you can also add scents to it. But the carrot seed oil has a pretty strong scent. So when I add other scents, the carrot seed kind of overpowers it. It's got like a tea tree-ish sort of smell to it. But I've also put patchouli in it and it smells really good. And so my friend was stressed out because she kept breaking out from all the sunscreen that she was using. And she asked if she could use some of mine, and her skin completely cleared up. And what? It did not break her out. It is a really great product. And so funny you say that, because I just took pictures of making it so that I could put the recipe on my blog. So I'll put the recipe up there and you can take a look at it and make it. It's so easy to make and it's really good and it feels good on your skin.
Oh, I love that. I can't wait to make some. Yeah! That is awesome.
So cool. I remember making some like DIY beauty products as a kid as like a fun like birthday party activity or something. And even then it was like the best thing I'd ever done. And I don't know why I never pursued that as like a making activity.
Fun. I threw a little bath and beauty product party once. And a bunch of friends came over and we made like mini deodorants and we made sunscreens and we made like body lotion bars. And it's so fun because I feel like – so my wife is sober and we're always trying to figure out new ways to be social with people that don't involve going to a restaurant, because she can hardly eat at any of them, and going out for drinks. I do drink, so I'm not like against it or anything, but I appreciate – trying to find other ways to hang out. Mm. So like when you guys had the jeans making party here, like I love stuff like that where you're still being social, but you're doing something a little bit more outside of the norm. Mm-hmm. Like I really would like to incorporate that into my life more. Like fewer bars. Like bars just smell like mop water sometimes.
Oh, they do. That's a good comparison. I agree with you.
I sometimes have a good time at bars, but most of the time I'm like, let's all just go to my apartment and do this.
And just hang out and like have wine on the couch.
The drinks are cheaper.
Yeah. The drinks are cheaper. I have so many board games.
Yes.
We're gonna have so much fun.
I am so, so into that. And that has been like, you know, having lived in New York, this is a weird segue of topic, but having lived in New York where it's very, you know, the city is your home.
Yeah.
And then moving to LA where it's like, no, your home is your home. You're not trying to be in traffic going anywhere for like 2 hours. So it feels more like people going to people's houses to spend time instead of going out to a bar where you have to like drive and then you don't want to get drunk. And so it's like, do you take a lift? Like all that stuff.
Yeah.
It's more based in like pockets of going around to different people's houses, which I really love because I feel like it gives you a little bit more opportunity to do different things like play board games.
Yeah.
And hang out.
Okay. I want to come back to your blog for a second. Well, actually, you're sewing more than anything, but you've worked with like a lot of different fabrics mm-hmm. and tricky things like velvet and sequins mm-hmm. and boning and all of these fun things. Do you have any tips for people working with those kinds of things? Because holiday dress season's coming up.
Oh, it sure is coming up.
Yeah.
I just love the way fun, different fabrics like that look. And I was really afraid of using them for a super long time because I think it's really easy for us to talk ourselves out of doing something to kind of – it's weird. Like you make things and you try new things, but you can still get into a rut within that world. And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to stop saying how pretty this is. Too bad I'll never sew with it and just get it. All I do is a quick Google search of like – how to sew a sequins. And I just see what like the top things are. And sometimes I'll come across like an amazing blogger who did a whole long post giving you all these really great tips. And sometimes it'll be like threads.com.
Yeah.
And it'll just give you a couple of good things. And I'm like, all right, let's see where I go from there. And you know, it's funny, like when I sewed with velvet for the first time last year, and that was really tough. It was not working well with me. And then I sewed with it like 3 times in the past few months and it's been fine. So it's really weird. I think it's just your own, you know, sometimes your own biggest blockade, I think. Mm-hmm. And you have these ideas that it's going to be so hard. And sometimes it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy, but I think I got far enough away with it where I forgot. And I was like, no, I'm sewing this velvet. And it was like, just the easiest thing in the world. So the first time I had like the spray glue where I sewed the seams together and I was using tape. I was doing every velvet trick that I read.
I was overhandling
it. So then I had sticky velvet. My fingers were covered in like velvet dust.
Oh my gosh.
And it was messy and I was like, this isn't fun. And this last time I don't even know if I pinned it. I didn't even use a walking foot and it was fine. Like it's better than the first dress that I made. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of cool to like push yourself and then like take a step back and be like, what are we really doing here? We're just sewing some pretty garments, you know, yeah. This isn't yeah. like rocket science or anything like that. So you do not need the spray glue for velvet. You don't need it. You're fine. I do prefer serging velvet. It's just way quicker and it's easier to keep your edges together. The reason that the velvet is so tricky is because if the plush is hitting each other on different sides, it'll make the fabric move under your needle. So it's hard to keep your seam allowance even all the way down. But if you serge it, woo, it is amazing.
Contain all that velvet dust too. Contain
all that velvet dust too. Yeah. Oh my gosh, yes. And then, so I just made this dress. I made a dress out of lace. And I was nervous about that too because I had never worked with it before. And it ended up being I started and I was like, this is a cinch. Whoever even complains about this? And then I had to gather like 10 yards of it into a skirt. And gathering lace is torture.
How do you even? I mean, you must have to sew like a tape at the top before you gather it or something?
Well, I wish you'd been in my craft room.
Oh. You're like, my needle just keeps going through these giant lace holes.
That's literally what, like, I'm pulling the thread to gather it, and it's just, like, gigantic holes that, like, aren't gathered at all because there's no fabric there to, like, catch onto.
Caroline's just like, I just would think that you would just do this, and it would be fine.
And I'm like, Caroline? I'm sorry. Good on you, girl.
She went to fashion school.
Good on you. I could have done that, and it would have been great. Or do, like, the little zigzag over the piece of yarn thing would have been.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that would have been another smart way to gather lace. Other than that, it was, like, a dream to work with.
Cool. And you had to put a lining under it, I assume, or did you do like a see-through kind of thing?
No, I did a lining under. So I bought all the wrong fabric for this pattern. I just saw it said lace, and I was like, okay, So I went to the fabric store, my favorite store, and they had this like beautiful chartreuse lace, and I got it and I was so excited. And then I get home to like start cutting it out. And it's like, your fabric needs to have this much stretch, and so does your lining. And mine were like, my lining was like a prom dress, like really thick, stable fabric. I don't know what kind it was, but it was the only color that Michael Levine's had that worked with the chartreuse lace, because it's a real specific color.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, what the heck am I going to do? And I just went for it, guys. And guess what? It came out just fine. Because it's a big four pattern, so it's got like 15 inches of ease in it already.
This is the second time someone says that on the show. It's true.
You guys, true, like I didn't even change the sizing of it or anything, and it was supposed to be for a knit, and it fits.
You were, and you just went for it. You were like, "This is supposed to be for a knit, but I'll just squeeze my body into it."
I sure did. I said, "You know what? If there needs to be drastic changes, then I'll let the seams out, but I'm just going to go for it." Because again, I didn't want to make a muslin.
Yeah,
because sometimes I'm lazy. I almost always make them for pants, and I used to make them a lot more with dresses, but as I get a better understanding of the adjustments I need to make with the pattern, I don't always have to, like, I know to grade out for the hips and grade in for the waist and make a shoulder. Like, I know all those things now, so I don't have to do as many muslins. But with pants, you better muslin this bottom half.
Yeah, there's so much work too. You don't want to get to the end.
Oh, and my gosh. I have just been so devastated by ridiculous mistakes I have made in pants making. So that's pretty much where I'm like, okay, you have to make a muslin. Although I was looking at a story of Closet Case Files the other day, and she was making muslin in pants, and she markered the pockets on the back. And I was like, that's so smart. Instead of like cutting them out and sewing them. She's a genius.
I was watching probably the same story that where she was muslining the Lander pants. The Landers,
yes.
Right? And she just like, I've had the same fit issue of her with her. Same fit issue as her.
Yeah.
And she just like added a little wedge like in her muslin. She just like snipped it open and I was like, why didn't I think of that?
It like, really is like watching a magician work. And I know she's like, guys, you can do it too. And I get it. And I've done like steps that she's put out and it happened, but watching a master at work, there's nothing like it, Heather. Oh, Heather.
Okay, so do you have like a thing that you want to try that you have not tried yet?
Yeah, you don't have the default answer of shoemaking.
Right. I mean, within shoemaking, definitely want to make some sneakers. That would be really cool.
Be so cool.
Within sewing, I think, I don't know if there's anything that it was a coat.
Yeah.
Like a nice coat with the lining. And I did that last year. And just for the record, I used Thinsulate inside of it to, you know, be between the outer shell and the actual lining. And it's like a floor length coat. It's like a vintage coat. It's nothing like super crazy designy, but it's dramatic looking because it's long.
Mm-hmm.
But when I tell you that turning this coat from inside out to outside in felt like giving birth, and it looked like giving birth. Like, there was like a hole, and the Thinsulate's head was like crowning inside of it, and I was like trying not to rip anything and get it. Was cathartic, honestly. It was incredible. I even took a picture of it, and it looked like a coat giving birth to a Thinsulate baby.
I really think we need to work this into our sewing vernacular and be like, okay, now I'm going to birth the coat.
Is your lining crowning? Is the Thinsulate crowning? Once you see it, once you see that crowning head, okay, and make sure there's nothing wrapped around it. No thread is wrapped around
it. Yeah, no sleeve wrapped around
it. No sleeve wrapped around it.
Can't pull God the sleeve you out.
God forbid you
God forbid. Yeah.
Ripped from hem to hem.
Oh, you guys.
Oh, my gosh.
It's a very messy process.
Yeah. It's a messy project.
It can get really messy. Yes.
And boy, my hands were tired afterwards.
Oh.
But no, really, because like it's like 6 feet of fabric trying to get through. So that was probably my last big. Yeah, I'm trying to think if there's anything else. I feel like I've hit all my big milestones. Okay, nope. Guess what? Just thought of something.
What?
Like a for real ball gown. With like yards and yards and a like tulle skirt underneath. Yeah. That would be really cool to make. And I've never done that before. That would be amazing. Seems kind of scary. But in the wheelhouse, you know, as everything is.
Yeah.
Scary but possible.
Did you make your wedding dress when you guys got married?
We didn't have a wedding.
Okay.
And I did not. However, I have made a wedding dress.
Oh, there you go.
Which is really weird. And it's actually knitted.
Like knitted?
Mm-hmm.
I'm making the knitting motion with my hands.
I knitted this. I saw this dress on Ravelry, and I was like so taken by it. And it was really, it's like a pretty complicated, for me, whatever, you know, there's a lot of people that like knit lace like it's nobody's business, but it was a really complicated lace pattern, and it's got a bodice and these like crocheted sleeves and this long skirt. I had nothing to wear it to, but I was like, I'm still going to make it. And I'm making it in white. It's the weirdest thing. I don't know what I was thinking. Also, like a crocheted knitted dress in LA. Like, it's just, that was just a fun project. So I have this really beautiful white knitted and crocheted dress that I've never, that I've never worn. I can't imagine that. I don't know. Maybe I'll get to wear it to something special.
A lovely winter wedding.
Yeah. Or you could like, give it to somebody special. You know what? This dress is going to find its place.
This dress is going to find its place. So Claire and I never had a wedding because we had a domestic partnership when we were in New York, and I found out I was moving to Vancouver for my job. So it was more of a practical, like, well, she's coming with me. So we wanted to make sure that Claire could legally be in Canada and like have a work permit and everything as my partner. But we had been together for 3 years at that time. So it was a practical thing, but it still felt like, oh, we're ready for this, you know, step up. And so we went to the courthouse and our best friend was our witness. And, you know, we put on like a nice little, we zhuzhed an outfit. I wasn't sewing then. So it was like all just regular clothes. But so that felt like our first like enmeshment of our lives. And so then every time you move somewhere, you would have to get a civil union again or another domestic partnership. So once we left Vancouver and moved to LA, we were going to have to do it again. And then it's like, okay, come on, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, but the, we were going to go get it again in LA, and then marriage was legalized. And we were like, oh, well, I guess we don't have to do a civil domestic partnership. We can have an actual wedding. And so again, practical, like, let's just get this done. We did it in our living room. The lady came. We had a best friend. She snapped some pictures. Our dog was there. It was very special and very intimate. But we feel like it would be nice to have some kind of a party where our families are both there. So if that happens, I'm planning on wearing this knitted wedding dress.
But I love your attitude towards this dress because you just wanted to make it, and you just like, you didn't let the fact that it wasn't practical for your lifestyle or the fact that you had nowhere to wear it. Like you just made it anyway.
You are absolutely right. And I don't know where I got that from. I have like a weird amount of patience with myself. I think that dress, I messed up the lace on the bodice. I finished the entire bodice and I had messed it up so bad that I was, and I'm not, that's one of the questions. Am I a perfectionist? Heck no. But it was a glaring, like a couple of spots in the lace that your eye just kept going to. And I was like, I can't keep it. So I took it all out, and it had taken me like 2 months to do it. And I took it all out and did it again. Thank God I wasn't actually making it for a wedding, because it would not have been done in time. But yeah, I've got this weird, I can't tell if it's masochistic or not, but there are times when I'm like, I will not stop until this is done, or I can check it off of my list, or I can say, hey, I tried it. And they don't, I'm telling you, I'm not a perfectionist. I have so many things that don't look good. But if with the naked eye you can't tell, I'm okay. I'm okay with it.
It sounds like you're just like...
fearless.
Yeah, you're fearless and also like extremely creative. Are you familiar with Elizabeth Gilbert? She wrote the book Big Magic, and it's about how creativity sort of strikes you in the moment and you feel like compelled as an artist to follow that sort of thread of creativity, no matter how like backbreaking or challenging or depressing or whatever it is that you're wrapped up in, whether you're a writer or an actor or a sewist.
Yeah.
Sounds like that kind of crazy.
That really resonates with me. And I have conversations with Claire about it all the time, because I always say that, you know, she's so fearless and she's got so much willpower, and I don't see that in myself. And I think that it's because culturally we are not taught to look at the art of craft and making with eyes that kind of uphold it as this like cool artistic endeavor. And it's more seen as like, oh, well, that's how she makes her money. Well, she weaves baskets. That's how she puts food on the table. Mm-hmm. As opposed to it being like an art form that also has some functionality because she can make money off of it. And, you know, compared to like beautiful paintings that are put up in museums that cost thousands and thousands of dollars. So it's like this weird shift that I don't even have yet, where I look at the things that I do as an art form, because we're just not taught to do that. And it takes a lot of like being really thoughtful and deliberate with the way that I look at things. And again, I still don't do it sometimes. Like, that was such a nice compliment that you gave me. But I would give somebody else the same. I would say, yeah, you are very willful and determined and fearless. And those are just not words that I would use to describe it because of what it is that I'm doing. Mm-hmm. Talk about the patriarchy.
That is deep. All right, that's it for today's episode.
Oh my gosh. No, but really, we should probably.
I know, we should wrap up. I just want to keep talking to you, but we get to go for dinner after this. So. Yeah.
Yay!
Sucks to be you guys, listeners.
I think you're covered pretty much.
Yeah. Ooh, how big is your fabric stash?
Oh my gosh, it's tiny.
Is it tiny? Another cute fabric stash.
I have a small. So are we saying stash is like uncut yardage, or like yardage where you can actually make, not like little snippets of.
Yeah. Yeah. Not like, like scraps. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
My stash is like maybe two like small drawers.
Wow.
I don't have a lot of stash. It's just kept small because, I don't feel good about having really pretty fabric and not using it. It doesn't feel settled. Like I would just want to make it all, and I feel like I would stress myself out about it.
Yeah, I get stressed.
Yeah. If I wasn't stressed, then I would do it. Like Stitch Odyssey.
Oh, her. She's been storying like with her Reno and stuff. Holy cow, that stash is insane.
Unreal. And she had even de-stashed like just a few months ago.
Yeah, yeah. No. Do you follow?
I do follow her, but I haven't seen this story.
Oh my goodness. It's fascinating.
Incredible. Yeah. Like she's really, and she said to me when she was like, yeah, sometimes I kind of feel like I'm having an existential crisis because I think, how could I sew this all in a lifetime? Mm-hmm. I couldn't. And then it just like, you know, makes her think of, I don't know, death and your time on this earth and stuff like that. But at the same time, you know, her life is probably longer being able to look through those cabinets and see all that beautiful fabric. She's got some really pretty fabric.
Yeah.
I have to
live a long life so that I can sew through this stash.
Yeah.
All right.
Whatever floats your boat.
Whatever floats your boat.
Yeah. I mean, buying fabric is so fun.
It is so fun. And I feel like a lot of times, you know, it's a hard thing to work out if one of the other reasons that I sew is to try and be more thoughtful about, you know, how much I'm consuming and what I'm making. Mm-hmm. And it's just a fine line for me with, you know, consuming less and loving fabric. And like, where does that line stop and how much joy can I experience with this fabric buying? It's just tricky, and it changes for me a lot too. And I think it's also a thing with me because I know that in my past, shopping for clothing has been such an emotional kind of therapy. And so I can feel myself replacing it sometimes with fabric. Like even here when I was in Vancouver, there were a few times when I was bored and I would just like pull the computer over slowly and start looking online for fabric. I don't need any, but there was that need that I was trying to fulfill. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there's nothing wrong with having like a healthy fabric life. I just want to make sure I'm aware of the reasons that I'm getting it, as opposed to it being a reflex for something else. Also something to talk about in therapy.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were mentioning therapy earlier because of Jessica's octopus sweater. Which she made, and then it was too small, and then had to make a whole other one. Again, proving that you are some kind of, like, creative, unstoppable train.
You're just hard-headed. Hard-headed. Very stubborn. Yeah, all of those.
And we were just joking that she was making another octopus sweater so that she wouldn't have to talk to her therapist about it in 10 years. About the octopus sweater that got her down.
It got me down.
It didn't get you down, though.
And there's a little girl in Atlanta, Georgia, who has an octopus sweater.
Matching octopus
sweater. That fits her 10-year-old body. Wow, that was some real misgaging there on my part. But she's happy, and she sends me pictures of her wearing it. So.
Oh, that's
it's
great.
It's really cute.
Okay, we cannot get into knitting right now.
Okay.
We can't.
Nope.
Guys, I'm sorry. We're going to have to cut this interview off at some point.
Yep.
Too bad, so sad. I don't know how to end it.
No. Okay.
Wait.
Do you have another question?
No, I just wanted to ask Jessica, where can people find you online?
That's how we end the show.
Yeah, that's how we end the show.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, you can find me at jessicanicole.com, JASIKANICOLE. .com And on Instagram, I am Jessica is try curious because I'll try anything.
Twice.
You're all my folks. Okay, there you go. Oh, and then on Twitter, I'm the Jessica Nicole, but I'm not that fun on Twitter. I much prefer Instagram.
All right. We will link all of that in the show notes. Okay. And it was so good to have you on the show.
This was a joy. Can I just say this real quick? I love the work that you two are doing. You are providing a very important and invaluable service to the sewing community. You have lovely energy. You're so encouraging and enthusiastic. And I just feel really lucky that I got to meet you in person and see that it totally translates in real life what you guys do on the podcast. Keep up the good work, you guys. You're amazing.
You so much. You're amazing. You're amazing.
Okay, on that note.
Da 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 da.
That's it for today's episode of Love to Sew. Caroline, if listeners want to get in touch with you, how can they do that?
You can find me on Instagram at Blackbird Fabrics or visit my shop, blackbirdfabrics.com.
And you can find me on Instagram at Helen's_closet or check out my sewing patterns and blog at helenscloset.ca.
And we're recording today in nighttime Vancouver, Canada. You can find show notes for this episode at lovetosewpodcast.com.
Do you have any questions, comments, or ideas for us? Leave us a voicemail. You can reach us at 1-844-SEW-WHAT. That's 1-844-739-9428. Or email us at hello@lovetosewpodcast.com.
Are you on our mailing list? Go to lovetosewpodcast.com, look for the big teal box, put in your email, and you will get weekly episode updates.
Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
Oh, it's fireworking.
Oh,
wow.
Oh,
they're really right there.
Okay, break time.
Yeah.